36%. That's the figure representing the proportion of young Australian adults who are now considered overweight or obese, an increase of 18% in just 3 years. That's almost half of all the young Australians aged 18 to 24. This figure is based on the revelations of the Australian Bureau of Statistics National Health Survey covering the 2017 to 2018 period, which found that there are now 1 million 18 to 24-year-olds considered to be above a healthy weight, medically overweight or obese. Of the 1 million, just over 30% had a body mass index of between 25 and 29.99, making them medically overweight, while 15.5% had a body mass index of 30 or above, what would clinically be considered obese. And then we come to the general adult population, and the news gets even worse. The ABS data reveals that during the survey period ending 2018, the overall adult overweight or obese population has risen to 12.5 million people, making up two-thirds or 67% of all adults in Australia. I know this information is a little hard to swallow and even sounds like I'm being critical of people carrying extra weight. However, this is far from the truth. Being someone who struggled with weight issues all my life, I'm definitely not here to criticise. I realise there are numerous and various factors that may influence our body shape and body weight, and many of them have to do with the kind of lifestyle that has almost been imposed on us by the modern world, including the kind of work we do, the availability of creature comforts, and the easy access we have to an oversupply of convenient, albeit unhealthy, foods. Not to mention our increasing workloads and work hours, which have left almost no room for any kind of self-care activities. You don't have to tell me, I know. It's a rough and tough world we live in that doesn't always make it easy for us to choose what's better for us, but makes it very enticing to choose what's easy for us. I really truly get that. But you know what's also rough and tough? Suffering illness and poor health, which often comes as a consequence of carrying extra weight. For years and decades, we've been hearing the experts tell us that overweight and obesity are among the top risk factors for some serious chronic diseases, including diabetes, heart disease, stroke, osteoarthritis, and even cancer. And although the rate of overweight and obesity is on the rise, whether it's because many of us have just gotten sick of carrying extra weight around or we've experienced the health effects of carrying extra weight, I do believe people are trying to do something about it. And this is why we've seen wellness and weight loss focused social media pages, blogs and other internet-based sources gain popularity in recent years, which is both good and bad. Good because it shows people are taking a serious interest in wellness, but bad because not all the information and advice is accurate or evidence-based. This is especially true of dieting or weight loss related advice, much of which gains popularity for a period of time and then fades into the background after a while. An example of this are the many low-carb diets which have risen to fame in the past but have now pretty much fizzled out. There are also the diets that were a thing many years ago, went out of circulation and have now been reintroduced as a new and improved version, like the ketogenic diet, more commonly known as the keto diet. I've encountered a number of people recently who have adopted this method of weight loss and seem to be convinced by its potential. But me, being me, ever the dieting skeptic, I need a bit more than sponsored social media adverts and a few blogs to have me convinced. That's why today I'm having the keto diet dissected piece by piece to find out how much evidence there is both for it and against it. But because I'm no dieting or nutrition expert, it's a task that I'll need some outside help with. And who better to provide that help than a dietitian? Accredited practicing dietitian and spokesperson for the Dietitians Association of Australia, Annika Rofe, will be coming on board in just a few to pick apart the keto diet and to reveal its pros and cons. That's after the break. Don't go far. Tune to the Muslim Community Radio on 92.1 FM. I'm Ayla and this is Community Connect, where we are moments away from having the keto diet deconstructed piece by piece by accredited practicing dietitian and spokesperson for the Dietitians Association of Australia, Annika Rofe. Stay tuned for all those fine details and expert insights. The ketogenic diet is just one of many different weight loss methods in circulation today. But from what we've seen and heard about the pros and cons of many other diets over the years, today we find it hard not to feel skeptical about any diet we learn of. However, and because many of us have often reached a state of desperation, we're willing to give diets a go. Not because we necessarily believe they will work, but because we don't want to be left with the what-ifs of not trying. Needless to say, and as most people will attest, most weight loss attempts usually end in bitter disappointment and an even greater desire to find the one diet that will actually work. In recent years, we've seen many disillusioned dieters turn to the keto diet, and many appear to have found their weight loss success within it. But what exactly is the keto diet? Does it work for everyone? Is it sustainable? And more importantly, is it safe? Today, we'll have the keto diet explained objectively and in detail by accredited practicing dietitian and spokesperson for the Dietitians Association of Australia, Annika Rofe, who kindly joins me on the program. Annika, good afternoon, and thank you for taking the time to speak with us.
Good afternoon, Ola.
Good afternoon. Now, seeing that the aim and purpose of today's discussion is to have the ketogenic diet explained, I think a good way to ease into the subject would be with a definition of the word ketogenic. What exactly does ketogenic mean, Annika?
So ketogenic actually comes from the word keto, comes from the process that our body goes through when we are sort of, burning fat as an alternative source. So I'll break the word into two parts and explain. So the keto part comes from, when we normally we have carbohydrates, and that's what kind of fuels our body to be, doing things that we do. Mm-hmm. But if when we have lower amounts of, almost no carbohydrates, then our body has to switch to using fat as the main source of fuel. So when it does this, it usually, might do it in when we are fasting or when our body goes into starvation, those sort of situations. So then ketones are produced. So that's the keto part of it.
Okay.
And the genic part just means like producing. So in a sense, it is a diet that causes the body to release ketones since it's in the bloodstream.
All right. Okay. Fantastic. That's cleared up now. So with the word ketogenic defined, what then is the ketogenic diet based on?
So the ketogenic diet is based on sort of consuming smaller amounts of carbohydrates and medium amounts of proteins and then higher amounts of fat. Mm-hmm. So as I explained earlier, normally, we rely on carbohydrates to fuel our bodies, but, in a ketogenic diet, we're using fats instead to sort of fuel our body.
Yeah.
So that's sort of how it's, I guess, the background of what we kind of want. And in terms of, I guess, restricting certain food groups, you need to be cutting out carbohydrates. So there's a lot of foods that contain carbohydrates, like, fruits and vegetables, a lot of the whole grains, the legumes, like the beans, lentils, the dairy foods. So a lot of those are restricted because you can only consume a very small percentage of carbohydrate, about 5 to 10%, and the rest is mainly fat and protein. So because it's, you're restricting all of those food groups, you can have, I guess, a lot of a negative, side effects downstream and potentially long-term effects as well.
All right. So we'll get into all those little bits of information you just gave us then into a bit more detail later. For now, I would like to know, in what ways is the keto diet different or similar to other low-carb diets in circulation? Because, I mean, there's no shortage of low-carb diets on the market.
Yeah, you're so right, Ola. So definitely a ketogenic diet is not something new. So it's sort of been around for, a couple of decades, and it is kind of a low-carb diet. A lot of people might remember the Atkins diet from, it was the 1970s, that kind of started off, the low-carb trend.
Yeah.
And that is kind of similar, but it does have its similarities and differences with the ketogenic diet. So the Atkins diet has a couple of phases, so it's got about four different phases. So I think you start off with a really low carb amount. So I think it's about 20 to 25 grams. And then you move on, if you kind of achieve a certain level of weight loss, then you move on to phase two. And then it's a little bit higher and so forth. So at the end, your amount of carbohydrate does increase by the end of stage four for the Atkins diet. So it is one of those diets that people have been able to kind of live, I guess, reported success for weight loss. So it is one that gradually goes up, but for the keto diet, the difference is that you stay at the same level. So it sort of stays at around 5 to 10% of your total macronutrient intake, and the rest is fat and protein.
All right, okay. Now, from what you know about the principles of the keto diet, how close or distant is it from aligning with the nutritional or dietary guidelines that are promoted by dietitians and nutritionists?
As with any diet, there are lots of pros and cons for every diet. So similarly, just for this diet, the ketogenic diet, it does have its pros and cons. So I'll go through the pros first.
Yep.
So the pros would be like, it encourages the person to cut down on processed foods, sugar, alcohol, things like that. So we know that these things most people are consuming a lot of, especially in countries like Australia. You know, usually a 1/3 of our energy sort of comes from like these sorts of processed foods, or what we say discretionary foods. These foods, they're packed in energy or calories, but they don't have as much nutrition value. So the good thing about the ketogenic diet is that people on these diets will be having more whole foods instead, rather than having, you know, these sorts of foods. So they're having more fresh or whole foods, so that part is beneficial.
Okay.
Now I'll move on to the cons. So I've sort of touched on this earlier. So the cons would be, you know, because it's severely restricting the amount of carbohydrates that a person can eat, you're essentially cutting down on other sorts of food groups. So, for example, you know, if you're going to have a piece of banana or, you know, like any fruit that you'll have is going to have some amount of carbohydrates.
Yeah.
And also with vegetables, particularly the starchy vegetables like potatoes and, you know, even pumpkin and peas, so some of those would be restricted. So there's lots of those foods that would be, you know, cut out because you're cutting out your carbohydrates.
Yeah.
And similar with, you know, legumes and lentils and beans, so those foods, you know, they also contain carbohydrates, so those would be limited, and also dairy foods as well. So it puts you at risk of, you know, deficiencies of these nutrients, so, you know, like your B vitamins and calcium and fiber, so those foods, you're probably not going to be getting an adequate amount of these important nutrients.
Now, Annika, in doing some personal research on the keto diet, I came across some sources which suggested or claimed that apart from weight loss, the keto diet has been shown to offer benefits for a number of different health conditions, including heart disease, cancer, Alzheimer's, and even epilepsy. From what you know, is there any reliable evidence to support these claims?
Yes, to some extent, and the main research that has been done for ketogenic diets has been around epilepsy, and that's particularly around children. So this research started in 1920s, and it was sort of trialed, you know, initially with a multidisciplinary medical team. So this involved, you know, like dietitians, neurologists, pharmacists, doctors, all of those health professionals. And that's before, you know, when it was used for those, you know, patients with epilepsy, it did sort of have some positive impact. So what they found was that following a ketogenic diet was found to reduce frequency and the severity of the seizures they were having. So they did have some good results. That was sort of done in a very sort of medically supervised environment. So that's something that still continues today, I think, to the same level. But there's also been some, you know, talks about ketogenic diet for patients with cancer, like you mentioned cancer, and this was particularly for brain cancer. And I think it's to do with the fact that tumors rely on glucose and they can't really use ketones. So you sort of want to be disrupting the cellular metabolism and things like that. But because it's such a, you know, new area, we don't really know much about it. And the current evidence that we do have is very small, so it's based on observational studies, and the studies have been taken in, you know, small populations and in animals, so there's not much we can say for cancer. And also you mentioned Alzheimer's, so Alzheimer's is similar. I think they're still kind of, it's just something that started that's relatively new. So the testing that they have done is, I think, mainly on lab animals, so to fully sort of, you know, report on the efficacy of ketogenic diets, there would need to be more research. There's obviously a lot more research for epilepsy because, you know, this started a long time ago and it has shown to be effective when done under medical supervision. But for the other health conditions, I think we still need a lot of research.
Right. Now, Annika, taking into account the limitations and advantages associated with the keto diet, would this diet be recommended for any particular people?
I think it probably would be for the group that we just spoke about. So anyone with epilepsy, or I guess especially children, because that's something that has shown benefit. That's something that has been consistent for some amount of time. So it's, that research started way earlier.
Yeah.
But in terms of any other particular group of people, diabetes is another health condition where I think people may think it's beneficial for them to follow the keto diet, because the diabetes, for diabetes, it's sort of quite restricted, especially for, I guess, type 1 and type 2, how much carbohydrate you can have. So a lot of people might think it's beneficial for them, but it's really important to seek the advice of a health professional, particularly a dietitian, if you're wanting to take on a diet. Diabetes is not my area of expertise. I'm unable to comment whether it would be relevant for a person, but yeah. Usually for people who want weight loss, ketogenic diet is one that might help them. And I think for diabetes, people often want to kind of get a lot of weight loss at the beginning,
yeah.
Especially to sort of help their blood sugar or to have help them manage the condition. So
yeah.
This is probably a case where they might have to kind of discuss with their health professional.
Yeah, definitely. So Annika, are there any people who would be advised not to follow the keto diet then?
There's a lot of people that would not be suitable. So anyone who has, you know, any sort of liver conditions, thyroid problems, gallbladder disease, or anyone that's had their gallbladders removed, and anyone with a history of eating disorders. So any of those people should not be, you know, recommended to follow the keto diet.
Yeah.
And as spoken earlier, there's lots of long-term effects as well that can persist if people take on the keto diet. So it's really important to sort of consider those factors into account if anyone's going to be going on it.
Okay. So while we're on the subject of potential side effects, what can you tell us about the range of side effects that people may experience while they're on the keto diet?
Yeah, sure. So I will go through the short-term side effects first.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I'll go through the long-term. So
mm-hmm.
The short ones would include things like feeling fatigue, having bad breath, and that's because your body's using ketones.
Uh-huh.
When your body uses ketones rather than carbohydrates, ketone as a byproduct produces this smell, so that's where the bad breath comes from.
Right.
Nausea, and also possibly a headache, and the biggest one would be constipation. So as I mentioned earlier, you're cutting out on a lot of the other food groups because you're limited to the amount of carbohydrates you can have. So you're also cutting down a lot of your fruits, vegetables, dairy, and also a lot of the grains,
like yeah.
Main carbohydrates. So as a result, anyone who follows this diet will be having a much lower amount of fiber compared to, you know, a normal individual. So
yeah.
As a result of this, they're going to be having constipation.
All right.
So those are sort of the short-term ones.
Yeah.
The long-term ones would be things like developing kidney stones, liver disease, having deficiencies of the vitamins and minerals, like the ones I mentioned earlier, and also things like, you know, the vitamins and minerals that we get from fruits and vegetables would be, you know, because you're not getting it as in enough amounts, it's
yeah.
going to be much lower. So, for example, you know, potatoes, white potatoes are a good source of vitamin C.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you're a person's not eating, you know, this for a really long time, you know, that's going to be affecting their levels.
Annika, can these deficiencies be averted or prevented by taking supplements if somebody were to insist on following the keto diet, knowing that it can result in these deficiencies, but they want to do it anyway, but they don't want to suffer these consequences? So will supplementation help in this case?
Yes, so supplementation can help to some extent. So that's why I was trying to say before that, you know, if anyone does want to go on the ketogenic diet, they should always kind of speak to a dietitian and kind of do it under medical supervision. So
mm-hmm.
that way, you know, even though they're kind of restricting themselves, they're going to be, you know, at least making sure that they get enough of the other nutrients
yeah.
through supplementation. So, yes. Supplementation can work. There's lots of, you know, ways you can supplement, like fiber supplements. Of course, you know, if no one wants to be, you know, taking supplements for lifelong. So
yeah.
Obviously, I think it would have to be something that's short-term, and that's what a health professional would normally encourage, you know, if someone were to go on a ketogenic diet. So definitely short-term under medical supervision, especially a dietitian, and making sure to kind of include a variety of foods as well when you're kind of going on the keto diet.
Yeah, so the keto diet wouldn't really be an effective long-term weight loss method
So we think that it won't be as effective long term, and the reason we think that is because, you know, the ketogenic diet is so restrictive, it's going to be difficult for people to be following it for a really long period of time.
Mm.
I think they did a little bit of research for patients that they were treating for epilepsy, and even for those people, I think they found that there was a really large dropout rate. So I think it's really hard to follow a diet that's so restrictive for a long period of time because,
yeah.
you know, when we go on a diet, you know, the first couple of weeks, you know, we sort of, you know, feel very
motivated.
So there is that phase where the motivation spikes up. But over time, you know, there's going to be social functions or parties and events to go to. And, you know, it really limits your choices when you're eating out at dinner parties, or, you know, like any sort of occasion. So it's really hard to sort of maintain for a long period of time.
Mm.
And we don't really have enough research for like ketogenic diet. So the research that we do know was short term. So that's shown to kind of, you know, be beneficial for weight loss, but it is very short term. We don't really have any sort of long term research to say what, you know, what would happen.
So. Yeah. Yeah, probably because nobody was able to follow it really long term.
Yeah. <sorry.
laughs> Well, I guess that makes sense. As with any restrictive diet, we find it hard to really stick to those for very long at all because they're not very lifestyle friendly.
Yeah, of course. And we always say that, you know, if there's a lot of people in general that ask, you know, what is the best diet to sort of follow for, you know, healthy lifestyle or to, you know, live longer or whatever.
Yeah.
And we always say, you know, the best diet is one that fits in with your lifestyle and one that you can enjoy and, you know, you can actually follow for the rest of your life. So,
yeah.
you know, a diet like ketogenic diet might show some positive results in short term, but it's definitely not something that can be followed through, you know, for the rest of your life.
Yeah. The best diet, I think, is the moderation diet.
Yeah, of course.
Have everything but in moderation.
Yeah.
Now, Annika, with the keto diet depending greatly on fat intake and considering the fact that not all fats are created equal, how selective should people be about the types of fat that they include in their meals? Because for a very long time, it's been drilled into our head that fat is bad for you, fat is not good. That's the one thing that you should avoid when you're trying to diet or lose weight, in fact. And so this kind of goes against the grain, goes against everything that we've known about dieting when they come up with a diet that says high fat. And I mean, people don't understand how that would work. So I'm thinking there are certain types of fats that are intended in the ketogenic diet.
Yeah, so the ketogenic diet, especially if you're following it with, you know, under the supervision of a dietitian, if anyone were to sort of prescribe you a ketogenic diet, they would, you know, encourage higher consumption of good fats. So those are things like your monounsaturated fats, so things like avocados, almonds, cashews, peanuts, and also using cooking oils like olives or sunflower, those sorts of sources. And also some of the sources of polyunsaturated fat would be things like fish. So fish also contains omega-3, and especially the oily fish is, you know, like tuna and sardines. So those are really good. Some other polyunsaturated sources would be like tahini, linseed, also some of the nuts like walnuts as well. So polyunsaturated fats include both omega-3 and omega-6. So those are the fats that we would sort of want anyone to be having for, you know, if they were to follow a ketogenic diet. Some of the fats that we wouldn't want as much would be kind of what we say bad fats. So those would be the saturated fats because they can contribute to your levels of cholesterol. So those are the LDL, so the bad cholesterol. So that would be, you know, things like the skin from your chicken, like some of the dairy products, particularly like the full fat ones, and also things like coconut oil, palm oil, and also some of the processed foods as well.
Yeah.
Coconut oil has sort of been very popular in the last couple of years. It's just kind of skyrocketed and people have been considering it a superfood. Coconut oil in small amounts, like with any other food, is okay. So, you know, it's fine to have, but I guess you just need to be mindful if you're having it that it is about 92% saturated fat. And there's been a lot of research that shows that coconut oil does raise your total blood cholesterol. So it increases both your bad cholesterol and good cholesterol.
Oh,
so, you know, the research suggests that coconut oil maybe is better than butter in some cases. But it does sort of affect your blood cholesterol at the end of the day. So it's not going to be as great as, you know, some of the other oils that I mentioned, like olive oil or sunflower oil. So it's best to sort of, you know, limit your consumption of the oils.
Yeah.
And, you know, rather than, you know, going for other things like nuts and avocado. So with nuts, there's a lot of research on nuts, and it shows that if you're having about a handful, it's been linked to lots of reduced risk of chronic diseases and things like that. So nuts are great, avocados, like, you know, those sorts of foods are really great to include. With oils, just need to be a bit more mindful. I do know that there's been sort of new trends that's called bulletproof coffee.
Yeah.
And I think it's quite common for those following the keto diet as well, you know, because it's so high in fat. So I think it's got like coffee, butter, and I think coconut oil, so all of that blended.
Oh, wow.
So
fat overload.
Yeah, so I think it's because it's, you know, high fat, it does keep you fuller for longer, but at the end of the day, you're having a really high amount of saturated fat. So, you know, for those following the keto diet, definitely, even if it's for a short term, definitely be mindful about how much fat you're having, especially the bad type or the you know, saturated fat.
Yeah, definitely. Now, you mentioned one point about nuts, and I find it important that we clarify one point. I mean, we talk about nuts in a general sense, but then you've got your raw nuts, you've got your roasted, you've got your dry roasted, you've got all sorts of different types of nuts. Which types of nuts should we be aiming for? Is it more like the raw nuts?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So definitely we want to be aiming for the ones that are unsalted, most of the time at least. Mm-hmm. And I guess some people prefer dry, like, you know, the roasted one versus the raw. So because the ones that are roasted have just a little bit of lower amounts of vitamins. So, but I guess some people do prefer that roasted texture. So definitely, you know, it's kind of up to you to pick if you prefer raw or roasted, but definitely go for unsalted, and most of the time just to kind of watch out for your salt intake or sodium.
Yeah, definitely. Now, Anuka, to help us put everything you've just explained into context, can you give us an example of what a one-day meal plan based on the keto diet might consist of, and point out how each meal either meets or fails to meet the dietary guidelines of a healthy diet? Because I think, although we know what the principle of the keto diet is, I don't think many people comprehend just what it would look like on the ground.
Yeah. So I'll maybe give maybe two examples for each meal. I'll try and think of, you know, kind of give a bad one and a good one to kind of make it kind of stand out. If someone were to have breakfast, I think a good option would be, you know, to have something like, you know, scrambled eggs and veggies and with a bit of greens on the side. So then you're kind of getting your protein and some veggies as well.
Yeah.
And I think a bad example would be one I mentioned earlier. So the bulletproof coffee that's made with, you know, coffee, obviously, and butter and coconut oil and hard-boiled eggs. So the eggs, you know, having the eggs is good, but obviously the bulletproof coffee is going to be very high in fat, especially the bad kind of fat. So that's a bad one. And for snacks, I think some good examples would be to have things like, you know, some of the nuts that I mentioned. Maybe if they can have, you know, a bit of dairy, having a bit of maybe Greek yogurt or just any of those sorts of nuts and things like that.
Yeah.
The other snacks that would be, you know, good, like, you know, things like veggie sticks and a bit of, you know, cheese or something.
All right.
For lunch, if they're going to be having takeaway, like eating out somewhere, they could probably have something like sashimi, like if they're having Japanese, and maybe miso soup on the side, so skipping the carbohydrates, not having the rice.
Yeah.
And other lunch options might be something like a burger, but instead of the burger, you've got sort of lettuce instead, so like a lettuce bun, topped with avocado, and maybe having a salad on the side.
So I think
something like that would be probably good. For dinner, I guess, so if they're snacking again, they could probably snack on something like I mentioned earlier, like the veggies or nuts.
Yeah.
And for dinner would be, you know, something like meatballs and, you know, like the zucchini type of noodles, so the baked, you know, the zoodles, what we call, topped with something like cream sauce, or even, you know, substituting in cauliflower. So having sort of like cauliflower rice with something like baked tofu and, you know, having some veggies on the side, or having like a cauliflower mash as well. So kind of substituting other veggies instead.
Wow, that really kind of really makes it stand out in terms of just how restrictive it is, because you're having to make a number of different substitutions and finding alternatives, and I don't know, I wouldn't last a day on the keto diet in that case.
Really very like restrictive in terms of what you can have. But as you can see, you know, if anyone's going to be following it, it does have like that, you know, some veggies in it and, you know, good source of protein. So that aspect is good. But, you know, obviously it's really hard to kind of follow because they're so restrictive of other things.
Yeah. Now, Annika, from everything we've learned about the keto diet this afternoon, what are some of the take-home messages you would like our listeners to remember regarding the limitations and advantages of the keto diet?
So I think the main take-home message that I would want listeners to kind of remember is that, you know, keto diets might be beneficial for a group, you know, certain group of people, like, you know, the health condition that we discussed, like epilepsy in children. But it's not something that we would be recommending for the general population. So it's not a diet they should be taking up just because, you know, their next door neighbour or their friend or workmate has kind of taken it up. So it's really sort of, you know, it's, even if you want to go on a diet, it's kind of best to kind of consider your options and even, you know, seek the help of an accredited practicing dietitian, and then, you know, kind of considering your choices, because, you know, with the ketogenic diet being so restrictive, it's unlikely that you're going to be able to follow it for, you know, long enough to kind of see results on your own. So even if you are following it, it's better to kind of follow it with the help of a health professional, because then, you know, at least you've got that support and then they can sort of help you, you know, complement the deficiencies that you're going to be having in your diet with some like supplements or something like that, and making sure that you're not kind of going, you know, you're not going to be nutrient deficient for too long. So definitely kind of making sure to kind of seek help from a dietitian. And the other thing that I would mention is that, you know, with the ketogenic diet, the amount of weight loss that you get isn't going to be the same for everyone. So the amount of weight loss that you get varies. So even if you start the keto diet, you follow the exact same plan with, you know, your next door neighbor, you start off on the same diet, you're not going to be getting the same exact same results as them. So that can be, you know, disheartening, especially if you're putting in a lot of effort to kind of follow this. So it's always good to kind of, you know, seek the help of an APD.
Well, Annika, you've certainly covered the keto diet from one end to the other. That was one very informative discussion indeed. Now, I'm sure our listeners would agree that you did a fabulous job of explaining and detangling the keto diet for us today. So thank you for all the valuable insights you've shared with us and for kindly giving us your time this afternoon.
Thank you, Ola, for having me, and I hope it is something that the listeners, you know, have found to be helpful, because, you know, this diet is sort of very much trending. So, yeah, I hope it helps.
Thank you very much. I'm sure it has. been tuned to Community Connect with Ola, and you've just heard from accredited practicing dietitian and spokesperson for the DAA, Annika Roaf, who defined, explained and completely deconstructed the keto diet for us, pointing out all its pros and cons, including all its enticing advantages and off-putting limitations. Clearly, the keto diet, like many other diets, is not for everyone. And it seems that the keto diet in particular is not for the faint-hearted. To stick to the keto diet, you need bundles of motivation and loads of willpower. And still, drastic results are not guaranteed. So anyone considering a stint on the keto diet, tread carefully. Take your time, and if you can, explore other weight loss options. Because the keto diet is not a lifestyle, it's a short-term eating plan that may get you results, but won't necessarily help you maintain them. Anyway, enough dieting advice for one afternoon, because it's almost time for me to sign off. Thank you all for your company, and I look forward to having your company again on the next episode of Community Connect. Until the next time we reconnect, I wish you all happiness and wellness. Please take care and have a wonderful evening.